Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hello, howdy, greetings, welcome, salutations, and Tuesday, day before Three's Day, alohas to you. Boy, this story of these Thai teenage soccer players trapped in this cave and the way they were rescued has really captivated a lot of people's attention. Me too. I'm going to talk about that some. There's a really interesting article that was published today at The Atlantic that has some fascinating information about cave rescues, which apparently not for the uninitiated. Great to have you along. And as always, your input is invited, encouraged, and welcomed. Here's how you join me and be a part of the conversation. Just grab your phone, use the Ingalls Advantage talk line. It's 800-347-1063. If you prefer texting, that's fine. We have the Common Sense Retirement Planning text line number 71307, and my email address is bob@1063word.com. By the way, I guess worth mentioning again, if you had been listening to us when you're on the road or out of range of the terrestrial signal, as we say, using the TuneIn app, that one is now non-functional. Very clamped, it's gone. And what you need to do is go to your app store and download radio.com. Pretty simple, radio.com at your app store. Just mark us on there as your favorite, and you'll be good to go. This article was written by Sarah Zhang in the science section of The Atlantic. The worst thing you can do is panic. A veteran cave diver explains the unique risks and rewards of his deadly pursuit. Rescues are actually pretty rare. What Robert Laird, the co-founder of International Underwater Cave Rescue and Recovery, means is this. When cave divers get in serious trouble, they usually die. There is no one to rescue, just a body to recover. In Thailand, an extraordinary rescue effort played out this week for 12 boys and their soccer coach who managed to find high ground when floodwater trapped them in a cave. To get out, these boys had to dive through those same floodwaters. It's a perilous journey even for experienced divers, as underscored by the death of a Thai Navy SEAL in the cave last week. Cave diving is a different beast from diving in open waters. The water can be so muddy that divers have to feel their way out. The passage can be so narrow that you have to take off your oxygen tank, and you cannot simply swim up to safety. By this morning, divers had miraculously guided all 12 of the boys and their coach out of the cave under these conditions. I spoke to Laird yesterday about underwater rescues and the unique dangers as well as the rewards of cave diving. Our conversation has been condensed and edited for clarity. What makes cave diving so dangerous? The one thing that kills divers more than anything else is panic. It can start with a small thing, like suddenly you see bubbles coming off a hose. That seems so trivial and minor, but that can immediately put doubt in your mind because you're in a cave. There's no escape. There is no quick way up, and it tends to cascade. When you're panicked, there's absolutely no logic. There's no reasoning. There's no logical method of thinking. I've seen panicked people underwater, and they do not behave normally. You can even point the way out to them, and they look at you like you're crazy. And they've convinced themselves another way is the correct way. They may swim into the cave rather than out of the cave to safety. What do you have to do differently when diving in a cave? I would say the most important thing is being able to maintain absolute neutral buoyancy so you don't drift up into the cave ceiling and you don't drift down into a very silty bottom. If you hit the silt, you can end up in a silt out, which means that silt fills the room that you're in. You put your head underwater and you look and you can't see anything. You can put your light against your mask and you can see your light, and that's about it. Typically, in a large cave with known visibility that's fairly good, the chances of a complete silt out that you can't wade out are fairly small. The area that's really bad is sump diving, which is where you have a dry cave that has tunnels that sometimes go underwater and sometimes come up and through air again. You mean like the cave in Thailand? Much like the Thailand case. Those sumps are typically very, very silty. You have to have some specialized experience to traverse those areas successfully, with the idea you're not going to be able to see, you're not going to be able to communicate. Well, what mistakes can experienced open water divers make when they start diving in caves? Experienced open water divers unfortunately think they're qualified to dive into caves, but they are not. There have been lots of extremely experienced open water divers who have died in caves. The main one is the rule of thirds, reserving the amount of air that you have left so that you always have two-thirds of your tank available at your furthest penetration. There are lots of examples of open water divers that dive into a cave and they dive into the halfway point of their air. Cave divers look at the situation and go, well, they're already dead. And they don't know because they're probably not going to make it out. That's because you may not be able to go out with exactly the same amount of air you went in with. All you need is 30 seconds of no air, and you essentially can't go up to the surface. Chances are you're not going to make it. Have you ever had a close call? I was diving with a buddy. We were probably a mile back in the cave, and his regulator, which delivers air to the diver, started free-flowing, which basically means he was going to run out of air very quickly. This was a multi-tank dive where we had staged bottles over a period of time to make sure we had enough air to come out safely. We were just way, way back in the cave. Having two people come out on one set of tanks and going through the multiple stages is extremely complex. You just can't make any mistake. And he talked about some of the rescues his organization has made. One of the earliest ones that was remarkable was when they went to a cave expecting it to be a recovery. The cave was not known to have any air spaces. And they found the person waiting on the beach, had been there 2 or 3 days by themselves. They were convinced they were dead. So when they saw the lights of the cave divers through the water, they thought angels were coming to get them, and they were brought out safely. We've had a few other incidents where a diver ran out of air but was able to find an air bell. You can breathe off of one of those, if you're lucky, 15 to 20 minutes without saturating it with CO2 and passing out. The rescue recovery diver was able to get in the water very quickly and find them when they saw they were in this air bell and was able to go up there and talk to them and calm them down and basically give them their second regulator and swim them out. Most of the recoveries are pretty gruesome to talk about. I can only imagine. This is interesting stuff. Robert Laird, co-founder of the International Underwater Cave Rescue and Recovery. It was a team of Brits along with the Thai Navy SEALs that were responsible for this rescue. And from everything we've heard about the circumstances these youngsters found themselves in, along with their coach, and I shared a story earlier in the program today. Their coach also had been at a Buddhist monastery and had trained to be a monk. And using his training was able to keep the youngsters calm. Because remember, they went for 2 weeks in essentially absolute dark with very little food, just some snacks that they'd brought along for their soccer practice. Pretty miraculous that this did not end much worse than it might have. 5:15 here in the Bobby Mac Show. Take a quick break here, and then when we come back on the other side, we go to the phones for the first time in the 5 o'clock Follies here on Tuesday.
You are smooth.
Oh, yeah. You better believe it. 521 here in the Bobby Mack Show, in on the text line, 71307. Bob, I thought Limbaugh said you couldn't lose on any of these four Supreme Court wannabes. Well, we'll see. Bob, so cave divers, can they buy insurance or life insurance? Wow, totally insane. Bob, even weeks after the election, the what drop still cracks me up.
What?
Yeah, I know what you mean. Bob, how long do you think it'll take Hollywood to make a movie to cash in on those 12 boys' peril? Well, FIFA, you know, it's a soccer team. FIFA has already invited them, if they're medically fit after their ordeal, to come Sunday for the World Cup final. They're going to take them to Moscow for the World Cup final. That'd be quite an experience for them. Bob, all this talk about diving has given me flashbacks of Lloyd Bridges in that TV classic, Sea Hunt. Oh, so dramatic. Lloyd Bridges as Mike Nelson in Sea Hunt. That's how, okay, all right, thank you. Once was enough. That's how Jeff Bridges and Bo Bridges began their acting careers. Lloyd Bridges, their dad, put him in that Sea Hunt series as his kids. Tough role for him since they were his kids. To the phones we go. Jeff is next up. He is in Easley. Hello, Jeff, and welcome to the Bobby Mack Show.
Hey, Bobby, longtime listener. I just wanted to tell you, I've been driving down the road today thinking a little bit. You know, people get all upset about how much Trump tweets.
Yes.
And, you know, I got to thinking, and, you know, over the last couple of years or so, I've noticed that, you know, the media sure does attack him pretty awfully. I mean, it's almost like that's all CNN does is present news with attack Trump kind of agendas behind it.
Pretty much.
And, you know, so he's never going to get a fair shake with them, and I don't blame him for constantly attacking him because he knows that he's not going to get a fair shake from them because they're sort of agenda-driven, bought and paid for by real left-leaning kind of entities. And, you know, I don't want to get into all that, but, you know,
well, I think it's
really
I think it's
that Trump can talk directly to us, the people.
Well, exactly. And I, for one, am happy to have somebody in the White House who's willing to fight back. You know, look at the way
he's done some amazing things with, like, changing the VA and making it accountable for the veterans. And I mean, within the first 500 days, the stuff that he did, I'm in awe. And I thank God that we have a president that loves Americana and loves his country and loves the Constitution as much as he does. And I think he's doing everything he can to drain the swamp. But, you know, it took 25 years for the swamp to get this bad.
At least.
And you know, before it really started culminating and getting terrible.
Right.
But, you know, I just pray for him every day. And, you know, I think he is trying to do some good, and maybe he's just trying to find new ways to communicate. And the people that get all insulted by him not acting presidential because he tweets, you know, he really doesn't have a whole lot of choice, because really the only place on cable news media that I know that he would get an interview in a fair shake might be Fox News.
Yep, or maybe One America News. They would be the only two that I can think of. Look, you know, look at the way that W was vilified by the left during his two terms, and he felt it was not presidential for him to respond to that kind of criticism. But I think that only encourages the left to go further and be even more hateful and vile to the next guy, who happens to be Donald Trump.
And I think all of us conservatives out there have learned a lesson from George W. Bush that sometimes taking the high road and laying back, these people are visceral. They need to be slapped back and called out and done that way in public. I mean, you know, you have people that can't even go eat in a restaurant that they don't crowd in there and shout them out.
Right.
And it's just gotten to the point where they're driving the violence and the divisiveness through their rhetoric, which is basically socialist and anti-American.
And look at the backlash that it's generating, Jeff, with this hashtag walk away movement started by this gay hairdresser in New York, and now this column in USA Today from another 15-year Democrat saying that they're turned off by all the vile attacks and rhetoric that's coming from the left. These guys, I think, day by day are doing themselves more damage than they even realize.
Yeah, they're the only ones who seem not to know.
Yeah.
They're like drunk on their own Kool-Aid or something.
Well, the
majority of us who voted Trump in, and it was a whole heck of a lot of us,
you
I got
bet.
News for him. I think Hillary didn't win the popular vote at all. I think that was just, you know, something that they just said, we'll let them have that. We won the election. Who cares? But he won, I mean, you know, 300 electoral votes in electoral system that's really not set up to help a Republican win. Are you kidding me? That was a landslide.
Yeah,
you know,
no kidding.
People were tired of all this, you know, and only ones that don't seem to realize it.
Yeah, well, thank you, Jeff. I appreciate it. Jeff and Easley, they live in their own bubble. You know, that is their world. Matt is up next. He is in Greenville. Hi, Matt, and welcome to the Bobby Mack Show.
Hey, Bobby. 20, 30 years ago, I used to do some open water diving and absolutely loved it. And I was running around with a bunch of guys, and a couple of them liked to go cave diving, and they were always trying to talk me and this other guy into it. And I never, it never had a chance with me of doing it.
Right.
And he was talking to us one time, one of the guys that did it, and he explained it to me this way. He laid his hand flat on a table and spread his fingers out.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, now imagine yourself starting on the nail of your big finger, your middle finger.
Right.
He said, if you swim towards your hand, you don't have any choices. You get to where the meat of your hand is, and you're in a great big cavern. He said, now you had no choices coming in. He said, but now turn around and look. He says, what you're going to find is four ways out of the cavern. He said, there was only one way to get into it, but there's four ways to get out of it, and three of them are going to get you dead.
Right.
And he said, that's what happens to people, is they don't understand that when you turn around, you know, there was only one way to get in, but there's four ways to leave.
Yeah, so you've lost your sense of perspective.
And he said, that's what happens to people.
Yeah.
Because they get in, you know, and they think, well, you know, you know how to dive.
Right.
You know how all the equipment works and all that good stuff. He says, but you just don't have the equipment. And the, you know, he said, if nothing else, man, you got to leave breadcrumbs.
Well, you better have a pretty good sense of self-possession. He talked about that rescue cave diver group, talked about, you know, the one thing you can't do is panic.
Oh, hell no, man. That to me, I think that's why everybody was so obsessed with this story, is if that doesn't scare the living daylights out of you being trapped in a cave that's filling up with water.
Boy, I'm telling you, that will do it. And for anybody that is
water, anything in the water, but the thought of being in a closed cave with it filling up with water, man, that just terrifies
it. You talk about claustrophobic. And look, I get it. You know, I can imagine the adrenaline rush from doing that. But man,
I don't want it.
Yeah, you make one minor mistake and you pay with your life, don't you?
Hey, can I say one thing that this guy said about Donald Trump?
Yes.
What he just said, I said, one of the things I like about Donald Trump is he makes me feel like Abraham Lincoln. And Abraham Lincoln is famous for saying of Ulysses Grant that I can't spare the man he fights.
Yeah, there
and
you go.
Of all the ugly, I'd hate to be stranded on a desert island with Donald Trump.
Well,
and I would be buddies.
His Twitter feed is his Disneyland.
He's not my kind of guy. But at the end of the day,
I get it. Yeah,
at least he fights back.
Right.
You know, George Bush, John McCain, Mitt Romney. I mean, if you wanted a bunch of nice guy, get along, go along kind of guys. And they got Mitt Romney cheating on his taxes. and Harry Reid's response was, well, we won, didn't we? I thought, okay, well, there it is, baby.
Oh, boy,
there
I'm telling you. It's sad that it's come to this, but at least now, Trump is not letting them totally set the agenda without an argument.
I think of liberals as, like, battering husbands. That's why they're so pissed off, is because nobody ever fought back.
I hear you.
Turn around and slap him back, he'll really get upset.
Well, and bullies are cowards at heart, and when you fight back.
I think that's why they're just going off, is they're not used to anybody turning around and saying, no.
No, you're right, they're not. They're not used to anybody responding to them. Thanks, Matt. I appreciate the call. Good talking to you. 5:31, Annie's ready in the news center. On the other side, we'll talk a bit about Kavanaugh being the nominee. Jamil Jafford, who's the director of the National Security Law and Policy Program at the Scalia Law School at George Mason, is going to be with me next. Be right back.
Hoo-ah!
Welcome back. Great to have you along. 5:39 here on the Tuesday afternoon edition. Well, it is the big topic of discussion all over the country, all over the media today. The nomination of Judge Kavanaugh to be the next Associate Justice on the Supreme Court. And joining me now from Northern Virginia is Jamil Jafford. He's the director of the National Security Law and Policy Program at the Antonin Scalia Law School at George Mason University. Mr. Jafford, thanks for being with me today.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. We've already seen the predictable outrage that has emanated from the left in the wake of the nomination. In fact, some of the outlets not even waiting to see who the nominee would be before beginning to vilify him. So as the nomination and confirmation process proceeds, this is going to be a pathway that is strewn with IEDs, I guess.
Well, you're exactly right. You know, this happened when Neil Gorsuch was nominated. I was outside the Supreme Court that night, and I remember seeing people with signs that literally said, opposed, and then had a blank where you could fill in who the nominee was. Seems like the same thing's happening here with Brett Kavanaugh. It's just outrageous, but what do you expect?
Yeah, it is all too predictable. Were you surprised at the naming of Judge Kavanaugh?
Well, not really, because you know the president made clear that he had a list of 25 names that he planned to pick from.
Right.
Brett is a solid conservative. I know him personally. I worked with him in the Bush administration. He's been on the bench a long time. He's always been near the top of the list. We've seen over the last 2 weeks that his name was one of the top four contenders.
Right.
And I think the president picked very well here. Obviously, highly qualified academically. He's done a lot of writing. He's been on the bench for 12 years, so we know his record. Just like we did with Judge Gorsuch. We know his record. We know the kind of judge he is. We know the kind of justice he would be. And so there, nobody can claim, oh, I didn't know what was going to happen when Brett Kavanaugh got nominated, and if and when he's confirmed, as I expect he will be.
I found it kind of interesting, and I'd like your reaction. I noticed that it was Vice President Mike Pence who went with Judge Kavanaugh to the Hill today. We had been given to understand that former Arizona Senator John Kyle was kind of going to be his Sherpa to navigate meeting all the various senators on the Hill. Was that sending a message, having somebody with the heft of Vice President Pence go with him?
Well, certainly I think so. I think it makes clear the president intends his nominee to be voted on soon and to be confirmed before the election break. But beyond that, I think the other point the president and the team is making is, hey, look, Mike Pence has a vote in the U.S. Senate.
Correct.
He can cast that deciding vote if he needs to. Republicans ought to stay in line, and we got to get some Democrats over, including, you know, folks like Heidi Hadkamp, Joe Donnelly, and the like, and Joe Manchin, who all voted for Neil Gorsuch the last time around, too.
Right. They're going to kind of find themselves in an interesting, complex situation here, kind of between a rock and a hard place, because if they do the party's bidding, that is the DNC's bidding, and vote against Judge Kavanaugh, then, of course, they're being good graces with the party, but they're risking their own reelection possibilities come November.
No, that's exactly right. I mean, look, the thing is that they are in a rock and a hard place, but the electoral consequences cut both ways for them, because they are in these competitive states. They're really in red states.
Yes.
And they've got to go with a nominee who's highly qualified, like Brett Kavanaugh. I mean, you know, 2 degrees from Yale. He's taught at Harvard Law School, Yale Law School, Georgetown, published in numerous journals. I mean, his academic qualifications are amazing. But then you talk about the man. He's a kind, gentle human being. He's a family man. He's a lector in his church. You know, I mean, you could not paint a better picture other than maybe Neil Gorsuch, and probably both of them equally, you know, to be a justice of the U.S. Supreme Court. And so, you know, I can't see people voting against him. But, you know, it's been amazing to me what happened to Neil Gorsuch. I mean, it's kind of outrageous. You think about the fact that both Elena Kagan and Sonia Sotomayor were confirmed by well over 60 votes in the U.S. Senate.
Right.
And somehow Democrats in good conscience can't seem to bring themselves to vote for good, highly qualified Republican nominees. It's outrageous.
Yeah, and when you stop and take a historical perspective, Jamil, you look at the confirmation vote for Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg was 96-3.
Yeah, Antonin Scalia, 98-0. I mean, yeah. You know, the history has been that you, when you have highly qualified judges, regardless of, you know, their, what you view as their judicial philosophy or what you might think are their politics. I mean, remember, judges can't and shouldn't have politics. You know, they are not politicians. They wear robes, not capes. They're not caped crusaders like some of us would like them to be. They are judges who interpret the law. And yet, you know, the history has been we vote for them in large numbers, and it's only the recent times where things have gotten toxic, and people of good conscience can't vote for the people they know they should. And it's really unfortunate that we've gotten this position in our country today.
Yeah, it's amazing because you mentioned apparently Judge Kavanaugh is a guy of really outstanding character. And yet the left immediately begins to attack him as extremist and outside of the mainstream of judicial thinking. Are they going to be able to make that fly, or are those just talking points for the media for them?
Look, I don't think so. I mean, I think it's going to be very hard to make that fly. If you look at the kind of man that Brett Kavanaugh is, you look at his 12-year record on the bench, I think what you'll see is a judge who's very careful, who's who's methodical in his interpretation. He sticks closely to the text of the statutes passed by Congress. He sticks to an original understanding of the Constitution. That is what everybody should want in a judge, because what you don't want on the bench, whether you're a liberal or a conservative, is somebody making policy, because they'd be unelected policymakers. Now, the problem is that there are a lot of liberals and some conservatives who do want judges to be caped crusaders flying around and saving the world from its problems. But the truth is that's not their job. That's the job of our elected politicians. If they don't do it, we should vote other people into office. But we shouldn't run to the courts and expect them to solve all our problems. We should expect them to do their job, which is interpreting the law in our constitutional system.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. The last thing we need is an ideologue from either side on there. I think the American people have pretty much had enough of the judicial system where we have activist judges who are not interpreting the law but attempting to rewrite it.
Exactly right. Exactly right. And one, you know, that's the kind of judge Neil Gorsuch is. That's the kind of judge Brett Kavanaugh is. Hopefully they'll both be justices together in the Supreme Court here in the near future. And that's what we should expect as a people. You know, we've gotten too used to running to the courts, and I think you're exactly right. We need to get back to electing the people we want, not worrying about the judges so much.
We have seen some fairly brutal confirmation processes in the past. Judge Bork comes to mind. Is this going to be the bloodiest one yet?
You know, that's a great question. It's hard to know here. We've seen a number of failed confirmations, including as recently as the Bush administration. People forget that Harriet Myers was nominated.
Right.
Ultimately, the president had to pull that down. I don't think you're going to see that here. I mean, the reality is, I think, at least in my view, Brett Kavanaugh is extremely qualified, an extremely good judge. He's got a long record. You can't really fight him on qualification, judicial activism grounds, or, you know, too conservative, because while he is absolutely conservative, he's well within the judicial mainstream.
And yeah.
You know, I just don't see a way that this becomes, I mean, it may be bloody in the sense that everyone's, you know, got their knives out for each other, and that's unfortunate that we're going down that road, but I don't think it's going to be bloody in the sense of the nomination going down, no.
You think confirmation can actually happen on the time frame that the president is looking for?
Well, now that's a tougher question. I think it has to happen on that time frame. To be honest with you, if Democrats were to hold up Judge Kavanaugh beyond the elections, it will be the longest a Supreme Court nominee has gone without being confirmed in the modern era.
Wow.
You know, at least outside of a presidential election era, which, you know, of course, is the old Teddy Kennedy rule,
right.
Which you don't confirm, you don't nominate a confirmed justice during that era. But normally these things happen within 60 to 70 days, and so it should happen quickly. But, you know, Democrats are going to come out and say, well, we need every single piece of paper that he saw when he was staff secretary. Well, that's millions of pieces of paper. And that's not realistic, and it's never been the standard.
Yeah, no question. Jamil Jaffer, who's the director of the National Security Law and Policy Program at the Antonin Scalia Law School at George Mason University there in Northern Virginia. Jamil, thanks very much for your time and your expertise today. It's going to be a fascinating process to watch.
Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
You bet. Have a good evening, sir. 5:48 now. Dozen minutes before 6 here on the Bobby Mack Show. Take a quick break here and then right back with more. Arriba, arriba. Underly. 5:51, it's 9 before 6 here on the Bobby Mack Show, Tuesday afternoon edition. President busy today. Yes, he was back on the Twitter feed. President Trump claiming today that he described him as FBI lovers. Fox News used to always describe him as romantically involved. They were having an they were each having an extramarital affair with someone with whom they worked. I got to get a copy of the FBI's HR manual and see if they're. Anyway, the president tweeting that FBI lovers Peter Strzok and Lisa Page are getting cold feet ahead of their planned Capitol Hill appearances this week amid conflicting reports over whether they will show up. Well, what's that they say, Moneypenny? Cold feet, warm heart. No, that's something else entirely. Both officials who previously worked on Mueller's Russia probe have faced congressional and internal scrutiny over their anti-Trump text messages. Strzok, so far, still expected to testify in a public House hearing on Thursday. However, a congressional source suggested former FBI attorney Page may not show up for her closed-door deposition tomorrow. The president tweeting, I'm on Air Force One flying to NATO and hear reports that the FBI lovers, Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, are getting cold feet about testifying about the rigged witch hunt headed by 13 angry Democrats and people that worked for Obama for 8 years. Total disgrace. The president tweeted from Air Force One. Page, subpoenaed by the Judiciary Committee to appear for a closed-door deposition in front of both committees tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. A congressional source told Fox News the committees are unsure whether Ms. Page will show up and that her attorneys have been hedging and could potentially ignore her subpoena. The source, though, said it was unclear whether both sides could work out an agreement so that her testimony would be considered voluntary. That's it for the optics of the thing. It looks better if your testimony is voluntary rather than under subpoena. Although, you know, for my money, both of them should be brought in manacles. Attorneys for Strzok, who gave his private interview last month, and the committee reached a similar arrangement after he was subpoenaed. Strzok expected to testify in public before both committees on Thursday. It's unclear whether he is considering canceling his appearance. There were reports that when Mr. Strzok did testify, he was, one congressional source told Fox News, Strzok was smug, defiant, and laughed off a lot of questions. The source also said Strzok refused to answer some questions on advice of counsel. Another source told Fox News that Strzok said he regretted sending the text messages. I bet there's the least surprising part of this story. Talk about a life changer. I mean, you send out, you know, a text to your lover when she texts to you. Well, Trump is not going to be elected president, is he? Really? Really? And he sends a text back, no, we'll stop him. Ouch. Page could likewise expect to face a grilling in her committee interview. She served in the FBI's Office of General Counsel and also served on a brief detail in 2017 on Special Counsel Robert Mueller's team. Page resigned from the FBI this past May. Both returned to the spotlight last month upon the release of the Justice Department Inspector General Michael Horowitz's long-awaited report on the FBI's handling of the Clinton email investigation The report, of course, included that text message between the two where Strzok vowed to stop Donald Trump from becoming president. The IG's report noted that he was specifically concerned about text messages between the two, between Strzok and Page, and the fact that they could potentially indicate or created the appearance that investigative decisions were impacted by bias or improper considerations. Certainly not. Nobody thinks that, do they? No, they were pure as a driven snow, right down the line. Bob Strzok said he regrets the text message. Well, he just admitted that he sent it. Yeah. Is this guy a lawyer also? I wonder. Bob, cold hands, warm heart, stinky feet, no sweetheart. My 97-year-old grandmother always recites that to me when I tell her her hands are cold. Sounds like something Grandma Hughes would have said. Going to take a break for the news, but fear not, the fourth quarter is still ahead. The bonus hour on the way next.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly.